Welcome to Spotlight on Science at the Smithsonian, a bi-weekly podcast from the Smithsonian Institution. I am David Evans, Undersecretary for Science here at the Smithsonian. This is Volume 4, Number 18, released on October 6, 2006. We'll start by looking at research from the Smithsonian Astrophysical Observatory. They are examining the movements of galaxies through the diffuse gas that permeates the space between them. Next, we'll look at the work being done at the Smithsonian Tropical Research Institute to examine the migration of species across the Eastern Pacific Barrier. Charles Darwin described it as an impassable barrier, but STRI scientists have found that some species have been able to move in both directions across it. Then, we'll look at the work of researchers at the National Zoological Parks Conservation and Research Center who are examining cooperative meerkat societies. They have found that the dominant female, who holds a near monopoly on reproduction, holds this position in part by stressing out other females, which causes them to be infertile. Finally, we'll look at another project from the CRC, this one studying suburban biodiversity. Using cameras and global positioning system tracking devices, researchers examine the movement of deer, bear, and domestic cats. Results of this research will show how residential developments in forests are influencing biodiversity. A supersonic galaxy. In the cosmic scheme of things, galaxies frequently collide with one another. Astronomers see these stupendous collisions underway in optical images nearly everywhere they look in the sky. The Milky Way itself is thought to have suffered such collisions in the past, and even now is headed towards its nearest giant neighbor, the Andromeda Galaxy, at a rate that will bring the two together in another few billion years. Astronomers believe that powerful interactions help us to produce massive stars that in turn enrich galaxies with chemical elements. Galaxies that are part of a larger group, even when they are not colliding one another, are thought to move in diffuse intracluster medium made up of gas that permeates the space between the objects. Astronomers are not sure what happens to galaxies as they move through this bath, or how galaxy interactions might feed the material into that medium. The gas is extremely hard to detect in optical light, but it is hot and can be detected in X-rays. If the galaxy is moving fast enough through the surrounding medium, the pressure of the medium can shock, condense, and shape the gas, thereby giving it a characteristic signature. Four Smithsonian Astrophysical Observatory astronomers working with the Chandra X-ray Observatory, Marie Machacek, Christine Jones, Bill Foreman, and Paul Nelson, have measured hot gas being stripped away from a galaxy as it moves through its intracluster medium. The galaxy, Messier 89, is a member of the Virgo cluster, a gravitationally interacting collection of about 1,300 galaxies that are about 55 million light-years from Earth. The astronomers find three features characteristic of gas being stripped away from the host galaxy as it moves supersonically through a medium: a dense leading edge, double lobes of emitting gas extending out from that edge, and a cool and long trailing tail. The astronomers calculate that M89 is moving at about Mach 2.2 through the intracluster gas, that is, at a velocity of about 1,700 kilometers per second, at an angle of about 55 degrees to our line of sight. These results provide support for theories of how galaxies and their gas interact and evolve as they move in rich cluster environment. Fish cross impassable barrier. The Eastern Pacific Barrier is 5,000 kilometers of deep ocean separating the Eastern and Central Pacific. Charles Darwin termed the EPB an impassable barrier. Reef fish generally live in shallow coastal waters. In order to understand whether reef fish can share genetic connections across the EPB, Smithsonian Tropical Research Institute scientists Harlos Lesios and Ross Robertson have analyzed DNA samples from 20 species of reef fish on both sides of the divide. They found that most of these species maintain recent genetic connections. It was previously thought that there was little larval migration from west to east and no migration from east to west. There is no evidence that major changes in currents or sinking of an underwater platform would explain these results. If that were the case, several species would show the same time of separation. These new findings suggest that larvae indeed move in both directions. Their findings, reported recently in the Proceedings of the Royal Society B, confirm close relationships between populations of the same species across the barrier. This indicates that genes move in both directions across the barrier. Although this research proves that the EPB is not truly an impassable barrier, it is still effective for most species, which are found only on one side or the other. Dominant meerkats render rivals infertile. In a darker twist to our understanding of cooperative meerkat societies, new findings reveal that the dominant female, who largely monopolizes reproduction, achieves this in part by stressing out her subordinates, causing them to become infertile. The findings are a result of a long-term collaboration between Stephen Monfort at the National Zoological Parks Conservation and Research Center and colleagues at the University of Cambridge, UK, and the University of Pretoria, South Africa. These findings were recently published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. Aggression is uncommon in meerkat societies until the dominant female becomes pregnant. About a month before giving birth, she subjects the subordinate females to escalating attacks. These attacks end with the subordinates being temporarily driven from the group for the remainder of the dominant's pregnancy. While evicted, subordinate females suffer chronic stress, which interferes with their reproductive physiology, stopping them from conceiving and increasing the likelihood of aborting had they already conceived. Seemingly, all is forgiven once the dominant gives birth. The subordinates return and help babysit and feed the young. This study provides strong evidence that dominants in animal societies can use stress to suppress rivals' fertility. This is even more surprising in meerkat societies because the subordinates are typically the dominant's relatives and helpers. So why does she do it? The simple answer, that it removes competition for the dominant meerkat's young, is certainly true. There is also a darker side to the story. When subordinate meerkats become pregnant, they will kill the young born to others, including those of the dominant. Thus, by stopping subordinates from becoming pregnant, the dominant reduces the likelihood that her own offspring will be killed. These findings contradict the consensus emerging from previous work on cooperative breeding societies that dominants do not use stress to suppress fertility of their rivals. Further research is needed to determine whether meerkats are unusual in this regard or if stress-related suppression is actually more widespread in animal societies than we now realize. Backyard biologists go high-tech. Have you ever wondered what animals walk through your backyard while you weren't looking? Worried about how far your cat strays from home? Researchers at the National Zoological Parks Conservation and Research Center, CRC, have partnered with High Knob area residents in Virginia to answer questions that will give them a picture of suburban biodiversity and the impacts of development on the natural environment. Community cooperation is key to the study and will hopefully shed light on the reasons for increasing bear populations and higher than normal populations of deer. The project, led by Dr. Sven Renner, a postdoc at CRC's Conservation Geographic Information Systems Laboratory, also seeks to educate residents about wildlife and how they can serve and avoid conflicts with it. To set up the project, 8 residents received camera traps along with detailed instructions. They set up the camera and leave it in place for about 2 weeks. Then the film is changed and the batteries checked, the cameras move to a new location. Then the film is delivered to CRC for analysis. As expected, many pictures of bears and white-tailed deer have been taken. In addition, residents are monitoring the movements of their domestic cats with global positioning system tracking devices. Back on CRC grounds, research is being conducted with another 10 cameras, combined with extensive field surveys to describe the songbird communities in residential areas and adjacent forests. Dr. Peter Leimgruber, the director of CRC's Conservation GIS Laboratory, hopes that the project will become a multidisciplinary approach to citizen science, integrating diverse research and education programs at the CRC. Already in the works are plans for expansion of the project to include aspects of migratory bird biology that make them vulnerable to residential developments. In addition, Dr. Limegruber's team at the GIS lab will be monitoring how future land use changes and residential development might affect Shenandoah wildlife communities. Results from this effort will show whether and how residential areas in forests are influencing biodiversity in the area, and what the conservation implications may be. It may provide new ideas for what local residents can do to protect their backyard biodiversity. Such strategies will be increasingly important as forest loss and residential development is rapidly increasing in Northern Virginia. Scientists and residents can work together to figure out how to save wildlife during such dramatic land use changes.
That's all for this issue of Spotlight on Science at the Smithsonian. If you haven't already subscribed to the Spotlight podcast, visit spotlight.si.edu to learn how. You can also download archived editions of Spotlight. As always, feel free to share your thoughts with the Spotlight team at spotlight@si.edu.